Why do we need another L2? And what is the superchain? These are two of the main questions we seek to answer in today's interview. In the case of Mode, a new L2 built on top of the OP stack, the answer is quite simple. First, to build a DeFi-specific chain with features for DeFi innovation. Second is to scale DeFi across the superchain and Ethereum. And third is to write the playbook for incentive mechanisms which reward users for growing the network. Today, we are joined by James Ross, the co-founder of Mode and prominent crypto builder, to discuss Mode's new economic mechanisms and experimental revenue sharing model, the landscape for L2s and alt L1s, and now L3s, and James' vision for how the whole blockchain ecosystem will look in the future, Mode's current airdrop and points program, and their upcoming token generation event, and why Mode chose to build on the OP stack and the vision for the superchain. Hint, success is native apps on Mode supporting users across Optimism, Base, Zora, and all other superchains. Welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Hamilton, and I believe that on-chain is the next online. This is the opportunity, and we're here to guide you to capitalize. GM James, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
We're excited you're here too, because we know you're in Dubai right now, and it looks like that city is underwater. So thanks for making the time for us and making it work while dealing with the crazy weather that's happening there. So good to hear that you and your team are not drowning in all of that water at Token 2049.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of wild. We kind of came here with the plan that we would just co-work for a week and spend most of the time at like our HQ. And yeah, I guess we're forced now to do this. So yeah, no events, just going to keep cranking it out with the rest of the team here.
So the boss is like, this is great. Productivity over socialization works
exactly,
better.
Exactly. Yeah, no excuses. Everyone's got to sit in the room 12 hours a day.
Okay, I want to go back to the beginning of Mode. Mm-hmm. And I want to start with, on January 25th, you wrote a tweet. You said, I've spent the last 5 years in crypto building incentive mechanisms. Our team has worked with 30% of the projects in the top 100 on CoinGecko, representing $100 billion in market cap. I've assembled the top research in the space to collaborate on Mode. Next week is going to be wild. Are you ready? What did you mean when you said you saw an opportunity for incentive mechanisms? What led you to focus your time and be so excited about the possibility of incentive mechanisms?
I've been building stuff. I've been like a pretty active investor and DeFi user LP since like 2019, 2020. So since like really the early days, I was one of the first users on Synthetics, Compound, DYDX when they had LPs. And I've kind of seen like, I guess, the full life cycle of how projects have tried to get users and incentivize users to build on their protocols, or how they've tried to get capital and users to their protocols. I also ran for 2 years a company called Hype, like a group of companies. Hype worked with most of the projects in the top 100 on their go-to-market. So when I was there, we worked with projects like BNB Chain, Algorand, Near, Definity. We like worked with Eigenlayer also last year, loads and loads of others. And the focus is really always, you know, when you're trying to design any type of product, the focus should be on like, what are you doing for the user? What are you making easier? What are you making better? And the same when you're building a protocol or any tool, any piece of software for developers, you have to ask the question, what are we doing better? What are we making easier? Right. And I try and kind of have this approach with everything. It's like, what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. Right. And that can range from maybe it's being part of a community. Like people might join a project because they like the other people in it. They like the vibes. There might not have to be like a specific utility. But when it comes to DeFi, often there is a specific utility people are looking for, right? And that utility is to earn yield. or to get some kind of return on their assets on a risk-adjusted basis. So the kind of genesis story of Mode is that after working with all these teams, I thought that a lot of them were overlooking different kind of incentive mechanisms that could bring users to their chain. And they really weren't taking enough of a product approach, like especially L2s. I thought there wasn't really a product approach to how they think about growing their user base. Often like the user base of a protocol would be split across like loads of different applications. And the users might have like the central Discord, but they wouldn't really have like many other information hubs. So the user journey of someone discovering an L2, like let's say just for example, like Optimism or Arbitrum, was that they would discover the L2 usually through a protocol. And then through that protocol, they would like maybe go back to the L2 website. They would then like bridge via like a bridge, if the L2 even had like bridges on their website. Then they would go back, then they would have like everything in MetaMask. Then they would go back to the application, they would use the application. They might like follow on Twitter. It's kind of like you're being thrown all around the place. And this is partly by design. This is definitely the most decentralized way for a protocol to grow, to have all these separate applications. And, you know, as a user, you have to discover them all yourself. But with Mode, we really wanted to try and think about how can we create a really good user experience. So a user can come to a central place, they can discover applications on the network which have been vetted and which have had audits and passed a certain level of scrutiny. They can understand the benefits of each of those protocols quickly, and then they can go and explore those protocols, and the actions they do on those protocols will feed back into like a larger model of contribution. So if they perform certain actions on the protocol and it benefits the network, then they should earn something from the network. That was kind of always the vision. And after I spoke with a number of different L1s, L2s about like this type of approach, none of them were really that interested. When I just started to discuss this idea with Optimism, Optimism explained like the vision for the superchain and how they would prioritize, or they would look to prioritize all these different chains building using the OP stack. And they kind of saw a world where there'd be hundreds of chains, each running different experiments like this around not necessarily the tech stack. Like OP mainnet would focus very much on tech governance, and they wanted other chains to start to focus on different areas like gaming, DeFi, consumer, like Base has done an amazing job of, and also to experiment with different incentive models, different governance models. Mm-hmm. So we saw a really good opportunity to start Mode with the support of Optimism and build out a chain that focuses on DeFi. And I guess more broadly, like bringing different incentivization models, different economic models to the chain, to Mode, to the OP stack, to Ethereum. That's what the last 2 months have been focused on.
And things are going great so far. Shout out to you and your team. I know you just hit top 25 in the TVL by within DeFi ecosystems. So way to go to the whole Mode team. Now, before we go further into talking about the L2 landscape and where you see Mode playing, I want to talk a little bit more about these new economic mechanisms, because it's such a big part of what you're building. And it's so different than, as you said, not many others. To be honest, the only other one, Blast seems to be the only other one that is really focused on building these incentive mechanisms and building a product around their L2 that attracts users and attracts developers in a way that maybe others haven't prioritized as much. And on your website, it literally says Mode is the Ethereum L2 that rewards you for growing the network via new economic mechanisms. Can we talk a little bit about what these economic mechanisms are, and maybe you're still building them out? Can you explain them in a way to us in layman's terms of how these might work for a user, for a developer, for a protocol that's building on Mode?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think like we've definitely been inspired by Optimism's retro funding. So Optimism is very much focused on public goods funding, and they use retro funding. And retro funding looks at the contributions of developers to the ecosystem I think it's every year, and they review proposals and then they fund people based on the pool, based on governance decisions. And the goal of Optimism is to continue funding public goods, continue funding amazing open source software, and build like a sustainable model for growth around this. Like, we think that's super cool. We think there should be a number of funding mechanisms that exist within crypto. And at Mode, what we're trying to do is build some very quantifiable models, right? So we're trying to answer the question, what is a dollar or an ETH in DeFi in an LP pool worth to the network, right? Worth to the network's growth versus, say, a dollar of ETH on a lending protocol versus in a DEX versus on a perps protocol versus, say, an ETH in fees that's paid when someone's trading. What are all these things worth to ecosystem growth? And how can we reward people directly for their contributions? Essentially, like, the big question we're trying to answer, because that's essentially like, yeah, thinking about like an L2 as a business or having a business model. And we're trying to figure out how can we direct incentives to the users that contribute the most, and how can we create a sustainable ecosystem from this? If you think about any open source software, the biggest reason for failure is it runs out of funding. And like open source software or software in general, the key thing is to build a sustainable business model. And so that's what we're trying to do here. Like, we're trying to firstly build Mode into a sustainable ecosystem, but build out new funding and new distribution mechanisms for value, so that all the applications building on Mode can also build out successful businesses that are sustainable in the long term. So we have the airdrop campaign, which is like a campaign which, if people do certain tasks on chain across the different protocols on Mode, they earn points. Those points will become tokens, and that will be the Mode token, which people can then use within the ecosystem. We also have a developer airdrop, which rewards application developers with NFTs that they can then pass on to their users, dependent on like how they decide users are top users is based on like their application goals. So a bit more of a micro level. These NFTs can be redeemed for tokens as well in the future. So it's really about like trying to think of different ways that you can allocate resources, and how can you optimize those for future growth, right? Like, in the past, some people did retroactive airdrops where maybe they gave out like 10% of the supply just one day as a surprise. It was like, hey, surprise guys, thanks so much for using us for the last 5 years. Here's like 10% of the supply. Like, that's pretty awesome. But I don't know if that's the most optimal way to distribute rewards, especially for like future growth. So we've tried to be really clear that like there are certain things you can do that you don't have to like guess. We've been very clear with the Mode users that if you add capital to Mode, you get a certain multiplier on points. If you add capital across these applications, if you become an LP, you get 4x points, for example. It was 3x points, but we realized that actually this is a valuable role in the ecosystem. So we increased the points there across all LP positions, like on DEXs. So yeah, we've been trying to essentially work out a model, or like optimize a model that rewards growth. Yeah, that's essentially like the hardest thing to balance when you're building a protocol, is you're trying to balance the relationship between developers, users, and capital within the ecosystem, right? And a successful ecosystem will have those three groups working together. Developers will build great applications. Users will bring capital to those applications. And because there's capital and there's applications, more developers will come. And that's how you like start this beautiful flywheel.
I was just going to say, it is a flywheel. And you're basically trying to reinvest the value back into the ecosystem for growth, right? But you're doing it in like an automated way, I guess. Optimism is the one that I think who mainly has done the retroactive goods, which I always think is great. And it is a good gesture to the community. But I always thought the same thing. Jay and I have talked about in the podcast a bunch of times, of like, it's great, but like, it's probably not the best way to incentivize the community. Like, you probably want to tell them ahead of time and actually tell them what to do. And then you can probably get a lot more, it becomes more efficient, I think, in the way that you're incentivizing people. And then we noticed Mode is one of the ones that has done this very, very well. I get the feeling that you have maybe a marketing background or something like that, just from the way that you're speaking. I'm not sure if that's what Hype was. You said more than that. Was it in marketing?
Yeah, Hype was doing a lot of different stuff, but there's like around 150 employees at Hype. Around 100 were focused on marketing. The other 50 were doing like product stuff, running validators. Yeah, different stuff. But yeah, I've mainly always been on like the business kind of growth side of supporting protocols. So I'm always trying to come at problems from that angle.
Yeah. But Jay and I, outside of Milk Road, we run an agency, which is a growth agency for media companies. And so when you started speaking there, I was like, oh shit, he's really speaking our language. And what's interesting is, you know, we've obviously interviewed a ton of people in the crypto space for a few years now. And what it's nice to see now about the people we're interviewing, like yourself, is like, it's people that have experience in growing companies and in like marketing and all these sort of incentive models, et cetera. Whereas previously, I think the first iteration of founders were just like, we're just trying to make it work. You know, they didn't think about how can we make this like the best UX? How can we incentivize people? How can we go grow for scale? It was like, let's just make this thing work and hopefully not get hacked. And it seems like we've reached this turning point now, or this inflection point, where now the founders are building not just to make it work, but to make it actually scale. And I think that's super exciting. But that's what I've learned in the first like 15 minutes of this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. In general, like just going back to Optimism's like funding model, I think that for them and for funding like public goods, it's kind of important. It's kind of a really good model for them. And I think also when you look at more creative endeavors and like more creative projects, it's really hard to like build like quantifiable models, right? It just is. And I don't think that's ever going to be a problem like that can be fully solved. But for DeFi, if everything is really DeFi, it should be on chain and it should be visible. And we should all move to a world where everything is automated on chain and we can see the results of all the on-chain activity, and we should be able to crunch the data and quantify like what means growth and what doesn't. So I think that's why it's exciting for us, because yeah, we have this opportunity, but yeah, it's also like quite challenging, because when we went out with Mode, like, and we went out with this kind of first campaign, we expected there to be around like 10 to 20,000 users. I think in the first 48 hours, they're like 100,000. Everyone was like spamming transactions, still like going crazy. And we're like, guys, like, it's okay. It's like a 3-month campaign. Like, it will be optimized. It will like become very clear. Like, we're going to keep telling you what you have to do as we add new protocols, we add new things. And people just like, nah, we're just going to go crazy and like just do everything. Because we're excited, because this is a new protocol. We definitely had to work overtime the first few weeks to make sure we were like indexing everything. And that was quite challenging. Because yeah, there was way more data than we expected. But yeah, now we're in a pretty good place with it all. So we're starting to add more like complexity to our models. And yeah.
On the incentive models, you talked on obviously the points program, but there was other things I think that I read when I was looking into other things you guys are doing, which was like, is it fee share, like from the revenue of the L2? I think you're going to find a way to like put that into the protocol to share with maybe the developers or the protocols. And then I think similar to what Blast is doing with Yield, you guys don't have that yet, but I think that was part of the thesis or part of the plan as well. Is that the incentive mechanisms other than points? And is there more that I'm missing, or were those the main ones?
Yeah, so I think the main ones right now, we had sequencer fee sharing. So sequencer fee sharing essentially takes the fees that users spend on transactions. So yeah, pre-Denken fees on Mode were fairly, I don't know, they weren't high, but like it was like 20 cent a transaction. Around 50, 60% of that could sometimes be profit depending on the L1 fee. So we were sharing like this fee with the developers of the smart contracts. In the first month of Mode being live, I think that was around $1 million of profit from the sequencer. And we shared around like $300,000 of that with developers. That was really great in the first month. It worked really, really well. However, since Denken, the fees on Mode have gone to under 1 cent. So the sequencer's not that profitable anymore, which is obviously great. Like transactions have 3 or 4x'd. So transaction volume has gone up like significantly, and users are paying like sub 1 cent for most transactions on Mode, which is awesome. But yeah, it means that sequencer fee sharing isn't as lucrative as it previously was for developers.
But when you say not as profitable, it's got to be more, like the margin's got to be bigger at this point. It's just much less revenue it's bringing in, or is it actually not as profitable too?
Well, it really depends. So now the margin is kind of up to us, and we just decided we don't want to take a margin.
Okay.
And the only margin is when people would pay like a priority fee. So if you pay a priority fee, that's basically profit to the sequencer, because there's not really much congestion on Mode right now since Denken. So like on a 1 cent transaction, if you pay 0.5 cent or 1 cent as a priority fee, your transaction will get included like super fast, right? So technically, it could still be profitable, but I think we need to like probably, we have around 250,000 transactions a day. We probably need to be getting towards like 1 million, I think, before we see like the L2 fee kick in and there'd be like congestion. And then that's when like people would start like paying priority fees and things like that.
So yeah. What is the business model then? I think originally when people first started launching L2s, they're like, oh yeah, obviously it's super profitable on all the fees. Obviously Denken comes along. Okay, maybe not some more. I mean, it can be like Base is still printing money. There are a few L2s that still are, but they're probably, you know, purposely taking that margin. But obviously, in the way most businesses go is like, if there's a way to get rid of that margin, then everyone's going to get rid of that margin and it's going to go to zero. And so you guys have already started that. There's other L2s that have done the same. So most are going to do that, I would assume. If that goes away, or maybe, like you said, if you get 5x the volume, you start to make some money there. Is there other business models or like, what's the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, I think that like this is temporary, right? We see block space, or we see like innovations in block space kind of always deliver like an initial boost in performance or scaling. And then we see that like over time that like deteriorates, like that edge or the block space gets filled. So I think we'll see the same thing. And I think we will see like sequencers becoming profitable for a lot of L2s again, because demand is continuing to increase. It's been like kind of up only with demand for L2s for the last like 9-12 months. So I think we'll continue to see that. So there is potentially still revenue that L2s will get. Some L2s are purposely continuing to add fees on and taking that revenue. Some are deciding to pass it back to users and developers, which is awesome. And we would like definitely continue to do that, even though it might be a smaller amount than hundreds of thousands per month, as we saw at the beginning. Other kind of business models or models like are focused around building products. So we've looked at like building different like vault products on Mode that have like native yield enabled. So we have a couple of those that are being built right now. One of them's nearly finished with audits. So that's quite cool. When you have a vault product or a yield product, you can obviously look to like take a small fee. I don't think we will, to at least to start with, but like in the future, that's like a possibility. Other types of integrations are possible. But really, like, we're not so focused, I guess, on like being profitable right now. The core goal is to build up the user base, build up the application layer base. And when we launch a token, like ensure that there's like enough interesting activity on chain for the token to govern like the ecosystem.
I guess the goal is, if you're not going to take profits from the sequencer, it's like, well, let's just get Mode to be a household name, to get big, to get a ton of users. And then you have the distribution channel. If you want to launch a product, you can do it and you'll have a ton of users right off the bat. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. You can do partnerships. Like, you can, once you have the users, you can figure out models after that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about the L2 ecosystem for a second before we go further. Like, I do want to talk about obviously what you guys are planning for with your token, how that fits into the Mode ecosystem, et cetera. But the L2 ecosystem has kind of been in the limelight lately. There's so many L2s at this point. I don't even know how many there are, but they're taking off. Like TVLs, transactions, users are just going off everywhere. Base is having a moment. So is Mode, to be honest. And then there's L3s now. I think there's like 10 plus of those. So walk me through your sort of like, I don't know, 1-3-5 year vision of where this ecosystem goes. Do we have millions of L2s and tens of millions of L3s? Do we have just a few? Like, how's this going to all play out?
the way that we see Mode fitting into a world where there's like multiple L2s, Mode's goal is to be a DeFi hub. So there'll be L2s for different things, right? Like you said, we've seen Base do like an incredible job of developing, let's say, like a consumer crypto world. So you have like, it started with like applications like Frentech, and now there's Farcaster. And there's all these awesome like applications being built that help onboard like the 10 million Coinbase users and bring them on chain. Our goal is to build a DeFi hub within the Optimism ecosystem. We believe that over time, markets always march towards efficiency and liquidity is going to flow where there is the best risk-adjusted yield. So our goal is to build out an ecosystem which offers a variety of different yield products. So right now we have a lot of Easy ETH, which is a product from Renzo, which essentially enables restaking through the Easy ETH token. And Renzo kind of like bundles together a lot of what is happening within the Eigenlayer ecosystem. So just by holding Easy ETH, you get your staking yield, your restaking yield from all these AVSs, potential airdrops from AVSs, Eigenlayer points, Renzo points, all through one token, right? And that's available on Mode, and our users really love it, right? We also have like RSETH from Kelp, EETH from EtherFi, or RaptEETH from EtherFi. So our goal is to have a number of yield-bearing products on Mode, have a load of integrations around these. So people can, for example, leverage their positions, they can lend these assets, they can earn interest on them, they can swap them, they can, you know, do whatever they want to do with these assets. And we want to continue building out some of our own products like that complement these. So there's like a chain that's like a DeFi hub. You go, okay, I can deposit my assets, my ETH here, I can earn this type of yield, and then I can borrow against this and maybe go and like play a game on Base, or I can like go and buy Zora NFTs on Zora. So this is how we see things converging. We see that like Optimism has built out this group of chains, and soon there'll be interoperability, and users will want their assets to be in a place where they're earning yield or the majority of their assets. And then they'll want to maybe borrow against these assets, or, you know, bridge some of these assets out to other super chains to use them for different things. So our goal is really, yeah, to continue to build Mode into like this yield hub and, yeah, have as many kind of different types of assets as possible for users. I'm pretty bullish in general on the super chain. I think like the reason is because, yeah, Optimism has obviously done an incredible job on building out a really flexible tech stack. So the OP stack for building an L2 is really accessible. It's incredibly powerful. That's kind of clear at this point because Base has obviously adopted this and done such an incredible job of helping scale the technology. We also see projects like Worldcoin, who they'll be launching a super chain. They currently have one of the largest on-chain user bases via their application. Well, one of the largest verified user base on chain. And I think this ecosystem is going to continue to grow exceptionally fast. And so it's a really good place to be. And I think right now, like when you look at the L2 landscape, you have to really think like it is getting competitive. So you kind of need to find your tribe as an L2 and find like your mission. Because just becoming like an L2 doesn't really mean anything anymore. And just becoming an L2 with like a slightly different stack, or like an L2 with ZK, it doesn't necessarily give that much more value to users. That's why I think like a lot of the innovation we're going to see over the next couple years is going to be very much focused on like the user experience and like what value people can really bring to users beyond just, yeah, potentially having airdrops or whatever.
Right. I see this, the super chain of having these like, with Optimism, having these like niche hubs, right? Like you guys are DeFi, mm-hmm. You said Base is sort of the crypto consumer app. You have Zora, which is for NFTs, and so on and so forth, right? WorldCoin's going to have theirs. And so it's a bunch of hubs of niche things. And then eventually interoperability sort of connects them all together. And ideally, it works all like one chain, even though it is actually a bunch of sort of L2s mm-hmm. under the hood. Two questions here. One, how does that actually look? Like right now, to get from Base to Mode, whatever, it is still a bit mm-hmm. clunky. You know, you got to add mm-hmm. the friggin' Base and then Mode and whatever to your MetaMask wallet, and you got to bridge it over. And so, like, of course, I know that that's all going to get fixed, but like timelines around that and how will it actually work and function from your vision? I know it doesn't exist yet, but it's being worked on. So if you can talk about that. And then the second question I have, just to add on to that, is the listeners here that are like, I just use Solana. I don't have to worry about, you know, bridging mm-hmm. and moving from one L2 to the other. Why don't we just put all this stuff on Solana and it's all good? It, you know, when Firedancer goes live, it's going to be 1 million transactions per second and we don't need all this stuff. If you can just sort of touch on that as well when you answer that question, that would be that'd be great.
I think like right now, having a load of chains is definitely a bad user experience. It just is kind of hard to keep track of assets and different stuff like this. We will see like the Superchain ship certain interoperability features, which will make things a lot easier. So there will be a bridge that's a Superchain bridge that Superchain that connects Superchains. So you'll be able to bridge in like a few seconds between different chains, and applications will integrate this bridge to enable users to very quickly move their assets like within the application across different chains. So maybe you're on a DEX and the DEX is a Superchain DEX and there's different pools and you can move your assets between the pools, between the chains without like going off and having to bridge going back, right? You'll be able to do it within the same UI. So I think that's like a certain element of like Superchain abstraction, which is going to be quite interesting. And that's probably going to be the biggest like UX upgrade, but you still will be like on a different chain, right? And things will still, like assets will still be on different chains. So, you know, our goal here is to make sure that Mode is the chain with the best opportunity. So people are trying to zap into the Mode pools. How this compares to like Solana and Solana scaling vision, I think that Solana is a different chain. I think the core, the reason why people will continue to use L2s is because you have the option to fall back to Ethereum. When fraud proofs ship, it will essentially mean that the L2 is more secure. So if you need to force withdraw back to Ethereum, you can, and you have that like added layer of security. And I think that's going to continue to be of like a lot of importance to layer two users from now, like into the future. So yeah, I think that's probably the main difference. I think, yeah, we'll see like a number of scaling solutions emerge for Ethereum 2 or for Ethereum L2s as well. And we'll see L2s adopt those. But I think it's gonna, every ecosystem has different challenges. I think right now, like L2s have done a pretty good job of scaling Ethereum, and there's lots more to come. So yeah, next step is chain abstraction.
Can you share some high-level metrics that you and your team are looking at on a regular basis? What do you care about? What signals matter to you as you, I mean, you're only four months in here, but what are the things that you pay attention to and measure success on?
Yeah, so I mean, we're very much focused on like having a DeFi ecosystem that functions. So quite a lot of like, yeah, I've been like all our team, we're like very avid on-chain users. I think we've probably taken part in most protocols launches that have happened over the last like 5 years. So we're very interested in how can we build out a DeFi ecosystem that benefits people like power users. So we're looking at like, what are the volumes like across the ecosystem, across exchanges? What is the slippage like across like ETH USDC pair, for example? So can I make a 100K swap with less than 50 basis points slippage? At the moment, I think you might be able to just about, maybe it's like 1%. But yeah, things like that. We're also looking at like how different applications can be interoperable with each other. So when you have lending protocols, for lending protocols to be able to have borrowing caps, like higher borrowing caps, you need more DEX liquidity. So we're always monitoring like the DEX liquidity to make sure that lending protocols can, if there is an issue, perform liquidations effectively, different things like this. So our core kind of metrics, I would say, like the level of like TVL within lending protocols, the volumes across DEXs and the depth, the borrows on lending protocols, volume on perp DEXs. I think that's kind of interesting. Then we're looking at like retention metrics around like how often do users come back? How often do users on lending protocols like adjust their positions? Are people like static or active as LPs in DEXs? Do they update their positions when prices change? Things like that.
How difficult is it for you guys to separate sort of the signal from the noise in terms of metrics? Like you said, when you first launched, everyone came and was just doing ridiculous transactions, and most of that is not like real sustainable stuff. Is it difficult for you guys to figure out like who are real people and what are like, I don't know, maybe bots or just people trying to cyber attack and stuff like that? Or what has that been like over the last few months?
I think that like, well, we tried to be pretty clear that like Mode is not a place for people to come and bridge $10 and make like right. five transactions and think they're going to get a $20,000 airdrop. It's like, not, it's not happening. It's not how it, the system is built. If you come and provide value and you are a large LP and you use like different protocols and you'll earn points, and those points will translate into, are you being rewarded? A point system, it's, you know, this is very much a product and it's an incentive mechanism, and this mechanism is designed to improve the ecosystem. You should only have points programs running as any kind of application or protocol that help your users get you as an ecosystem closer to your goal, right? So you're trying to align everything. So our program is trying to align the interests of users, capital, and developers. And this is, you know, the interest, or like the overall goal is to have like a thriving DeFi ecosystem where everyone is getting value from this.
From the time that this episode goes out, it's like a few days and you guys are going to be launching the end of the points program, or at least launching the token. Is there going to be a continuous points program? I mean, many other protocols have, they finish one and they're like, okay, now it's time for season two. We just had EtherFi on and they were like, yeah, we're going to do season two, but like, we can't do much more. We're going to run out of tokens here. So curious, like, is this a ongoing thing? Do you sort of transfer this into a new way that points can just continue forever? So you always have this sort of incentive mechanism, or how do you think through the long term of this?
Yeah, absolutely. We want to like have a, well, we have planned a season two. It's definitely got some different elements from season one. A lot of things we learned and have improved on and rebuilt for season two. So yeah, season one will finish. People will be rewarded for their contributions in season one, and then season two will begin. It's something that we see as like part of Mode's vision, is that we will continue to reward users. The way that we've designed the Mode emission schedule is to continue to incentivize and reward users who grow the chain over the long term.
I think what's interesting here is there's a segmentation between a points program the way we think about it right now and the seasons that we're seeing and what you guys are in right now in your season one, and an ongoing incentive mechanism to build an economy within the Mode ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, you're doing both. And my guess is, if you're strategic about it, you're using the points program to test different incentive mechanisms to see what works. And then you will maybe blend those into the just ongoing emissions of Mode in perpetuity. Mm-hmm.
It's like Ethereum, right? It's kind of the only one that's really figured this out, yeah. Where like the more activity on Ethereum, the more those who secure Ethereum gets rewarded, and it's the sustainable way that they've set it up, and it like, it just continues. And as long as there's more people using it, it just, it works and mm-hmm. it's sustainable long-term. Most others don't have that. Most of it is just inflation. And so it sounds like what you guys are working towards, what Jay said, which is like figure out a sustainable way to build that within the ecosystem, right?
Absolutely. And like, yeah, for a long time, the idea was the sequencer fees would be like a significant contributor to this. I think right now we know we need to scale up activity massively for that to happen. So that's like really the focus again. Scale up activity, see sequencer revenue increase, and then work, you know, then we have the model on how we can reinvest into the ecosystem for growth and like keep that flywheel spinning.
Right. Let's move on to the token that is inevitably coming. Mm-hmm. And I know obviously people are excited about. My question is, how does this token play a role in the Mode ecosystem? What is it used for? Is it just some sort of governance thing? Or like, how do you envision Mode? And I'm sure there'll be iterations over time, but like, how do you envision it fitting in with the total goal and big strategy of what you're doing with Mode?
So initially the token will focus on governance and ecosystem rewards. And over time, the community has already started building out different integrations, but there'll be various integrations which will be built around the token. But yeah, right now, like the focus is very much going to be on governance.
Can I ask the direct question, when TGE?
Yeah, I think it will be like, it should already be announced when this goes live.
By the time this comes out, right.
Yeah, there should be a blog post that's been published potentially a few days before this going live.
Okay, so if you're listening to this, you should know when the TGE is. So just all of our listeners know that we asked the question for you because many of you wanted us to ask that question in this interview. So now at least I could say that we asked it.
Yeah, there will definitely be an update post on Mode's Twitter. So
sweet. Yeah. One thing that I'm really taking away from this conversation is the manner in which the super chain is being built and the manner in which you are playing a very niche role. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of like this phases of founders within crypto. Is phase one was tech founders, engineers, no idea about product, no idea about user experience. And then the innovation of that, the infrastructure layer got to a point with things like the OP stack that a founder like yourself could come in and say, okay, now I can use the OP stack to hyper get to a point of a fully functioning L2. And I can instead focus on what I'm more interested in, which is incentive mechanisms and how you grow an ecosystem and how you grow an economy. And then the next phase, and what I think you're now looking at, is how do we attract a new level of founder who want to build the app layer on top of Mode? And I know you've talked about how you've said multiple times in your Twitter, my DMs are open. And if you come to me, we'll help you with how do you get access to OP grants? We'll help you get your first 10,000 users. How do you do that? How do you think about that? And all of these, it's these different levels of these layers are really setting up for different founders who want to focus on different areas of building on chain. Was that always your approach and always the way you saw this happening?
Yeah, like I think that's always kind of been the approach, right? Like we see ourselves having a role to play, and our role is to give a variety of risk adjusted yield opportunities. And we want there to be like some very secure yield opportunities on Mode, and we want there to be some, you know, potentially more high risk fund degen stuff, right? And we want users to have those options. We want them to be informed. We want those applications, integrations to exist. And we want this to be like a hub for the Optimism Superchain. And yeah, we're aware that like, you know, we need a lot of builders to come in and build this out. And from speaking to builders, you know, over the last few years, like the biggest thing they struggle with is getting users or getting capital. Most devs now don't really struggle with building the tech. That's usually just a function of like time and resources. So if you give them like the resources and the time, they'll get it done. They might need some help with things like audits, but they really need a lot of help with like, how can they go to market? And right now as a developer, you have a lot of great options, right? And you have a lot of great options from a lot of great ecosystems. And you really need to think about like how you can make your protocol, your application successful. So our offer to builders is like, if you want to build on Mode, we will guarantee you these users and this capital because we've built a system and a product where we have like the user's attention and they trust us, and we can present your product to them in a way that, you know, if it's compelling enough and if it has a strong enough value proposition, it will be used. And we can make sure you're integrated with all our ecosystem partners. And yeah, we can really take you through like that step by step to get you through like the bootstrapping phase so you can then go on scale. And like when people build on Mode, like the goal is that they'll come to Mode, they'll build something awesome, and then they'll scale across like the super chain, right? Like if they want to launch on Base, they want to launch on OP mainnet, that's completely fine. That's like part of the plan. For builders, they get access to like retro funding. They get access to all the funding mechanisms on Mode. So I think it's pretty compelling. We've seen some like awesome builders already. Like there's like nearly 30 protocols on Mode. Quite a few of them are native to Mode. So yeah, it's super cool. We're really excited about, yeah, how like we continue to scale the developer community and ecosystem. And yeah, we're also now kind of maturing a bit and working to bring on like more blue chip DeFi protocols as well. So I think as we move into this second phase, like this was very much like a bootstrapping phase for us. And now like the ecosystem has matured. There's like a considerable amount of assets. Now we need to scale up with these like larger growth drivers. We have like some institutional tooling that's been added to the network. We have like, yeah, these larger integrations like Velodrome is launching on Mode. Maybe it's launched by the time this goes out. We have a couple other large DeFi protocols launching. So yeah, it's going to be really cool to like see how this develops over time.
If the next Hayden Adams happens to be listening to this podcast and he or she is listening and has this amazing idea and wants to deploy it somewhere, where can they go to get hooked up and get into Mode?
You can DM us on Twitter, or we have a dev channel in Discord. We also currently have a like accelerator, a yield accelerator running. We're doing that with some awesome partners, Eigenlayer, Velodrome, Circle, Layer Zero. A load of other awesome partners are doing that. So you also get access to these partners. They'll be able to help with ideas and the Mode team, of course. So that's also something interesting for people to look at. Like there's loads of funding from the Mode kind of ecosystem, and also like opportunities to get like grants of 100K.
Cool. We'll put the links in the show notes. Before we wrap up, we put out a tweet before we went live and we just asked the audience, what should we ask you? And basically everyone said, when token, of course. But one person said, can you ask me about his skincare routine? I don't know why that question came about, but is this a thing? And do we need to ask you about this, or what's going on here?
Is it because you drink a lot of milk? Is that why?
I think I drink quite a lot of milk. I eat probably too many eggs. I think I have like on average like 6 eggs a day. I used to drink them raw, just like in a smoothie in the morning. Kind of like hardcore. I didn't do that so often. But my partner is like a Instagram influencer. She's a singer and an influencer. And so, yeah, she often throws me various skin creams. So...
Does she have a points program running or anything like that?
Can we
throw a link in the show notes for her skincare line? Or
I'm incentivized to use the skincare.
Yeah.
That's awesome. James, this has been just a delight. Thank you so much for joining Milk Road. Shout out to you and your team for everything you guys have built and your focus on really growing the ecosystem of L2s in a way that not enough are focused on. I think you guys have got a clear path to onboarding more users, more devs, and helping them really create a distribution channel to reach the users and the capital that they need. Just a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. Hope you and your team are able to paddle out of Dubai or get out of there, however you're going to get out of there.
Thanks so much. It's been awesome. Really appreciate it. Really great questions, really great chat.
Awesome. Thanks for listening in, everybody. Have yourselves a great day.
Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.